American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Wednesday, August 3rd, 2005. And this would be Newsreel, your daily report as the woke counterculture defeats the evil of core political tyranny. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening, you are as well. And don't you think for a minute that that same core political tyranny is going to win this fight, because they're really not, because of people like you who listen to Newsreel. And you can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. You can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. But very soon, we're going to be switching everything over to the Rant Media servers, so we got it all in one nice, local, convenient place. This is a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Radio306.com, OspreyRadio.info, and Extreme Radio Tampa. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way you see fit. You can copy this, send it to people, give it to people in the FBI. That's totally fine, because we have nothing to fear from any government institution or security forces, because we're doing nothing wrong. All we're doing over here is just talking about the news that goes on in the world in everyday way. So for all you law enforcement people who are listening right now, sit back, relax, crack yourself a nice organic cola, and make sure it's got no aspartame in it, because it'll make your brain spongy. Let's get straight into the feedback message. Dear Sean, I just thought you'd like to know that Japan is not the only one attempting to create a petaflop computing device. Now, this was from the story I did the other day. There are eight in total. Here's the links for where you want to go. Here's the eights, okay? So the eight ones are, there's a flexible architecture, blah, 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 blah. So there's one at the University of Illinois. There's one in University of Notre Dame. There's one coming up in the University of Minnesota. One in Tokyo. California Institute. Purdue University, wherever the hell that is. Northwestern University. Illinois, and one in Wayne State University in Jersey is apparently another one. So there is, in fact, eight petaflop computers on the go trying to be built right now, but it's all a matter of who do you think is going to be able to build it first. Personally, I would go with Japan, because Japan has got a lot of very clever people over there working on this stuff. Not that we don't have really clever people working over here on stuff, but Japan was the first guys to get us Mecha. They were the first guys to give us bipedal robots. So you know what? I think that as a matter of national pride, I believe that Japan will be the first people to give us the petaflop computer. That's just me, though. You know, what do I know about all this kind of stuff? Into the media news. First story, straight off the top, was sent to me by Fowler. Very, very cool. U.S. authorities have charged eight people in the connection with illegal trading of copyrighted films, music, games, and software over the net. So that's good. That's good. They've arrested eight people for talking and sharing information and giving each other copies of information. The Justice Department said they were key members in online piracy networks. They were charged following international police operation in 15 countries. Acting Assistant Attorney General John Richter said charges strike at the top of copyright piracy supply chain. Well, there is no, that's idiotic to think that there's some kind of, you know, structure or supply chain. This is just, you know, a shout out to put fear into, you know, anyone who wants to have free information. Cases like these are part of the Justice Department's coordinated strategy to protect copyright owners from online thieves who steal and then sell the products we work so hard to produce. Well, in actuality, they don't steal the products. Stealing would imply that you had something, I take it from you, you no longer have it. What they do is they copy the products, and then they sell the products they copy. Now, I don't agree with selling the products, but quite often a number of these people just give the products away. That is known as sharing, not stealing, just to, you know, put a bit of perspective on that here. Eight men were charged with copyright infringement in Charlotte, North Carolina, Oh, all eight of them, eh? And they're in the top of the piracy chain, I guess, in Charlotte, North Carolina. Following two FBI investigations known as Operation Fastlink and Operation Sight Down. Now, the U.S. really has got the best names for all their operations, don't they? The U.S.-led investigation involved 15 countries, including Australia, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, Germany, Hungary, Israel, Singapore, Spain, Sweden, and the Netherlands, Portugal, the U.K., and the U.S. Well, and I guess out of all those sites, the top chain of piracy comes from where? Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't buy that. Robert Clifford of the FBI was quoted as saying, "Those committed cybercrimes can be identified and located anywhere in the world." Robert Clifford has no fucking idea what he's talking about. The Justice Department alleged that defendants were making... The Justice Department alleged the defendants were leading members in illegal online trade of copyright material known as, quote-unquote, the Wares scene. Dun-dun-dun, wow, we lost the top eight people from North Carolina in the Wares scene. Oh my God, piracy truly is dead on the web. And it said that once a film or game is copied, the pirated material is sent to servers throughout the world in minutes, and they make its way to file sharing networks. Well, I'm sorry. I really don't believe that these guys in Charlotte, North Carolina, were supplying the entire world with, you know, their pirated media. I don't even think they were high up on the piracy chain. Furthermore, I will go on to say that I don't believe there is such a thing as a piracy chain, but hey, what the hell do I know? I'm just some crazy guy. In 7-7 news from Visage. Now, of course, I'm getting oceans of email, most of which I don't reply to, from people saying that I suck because I, you know, think that the guy did the right thing by being... Well, I think that the cops did the right thing by shooting the guy who was running to the station. And if I had been one of the cops, this is that poor guy from Brazil, who no malice towards him. You know, it's a tragedy. Don't get me wrong. I think it is a tragedy that an innocent man got shot. But I'm just saying the process to which he got shot, I don't really have much problem with that, and I think that the cops shouldn't be chastised for it because, you know, you tell somebody to stop in the circumstances that was surrounding this, and the dude doesn't stop, yeah, you shoot him. That's how it works. Now, police have come forward, and they said the police have to have a shoot-to-kill policy counter the mounting terrorist threat in London, Ken Livingston conceded yesterday. What, with the capital on high alert after two sets of terrorist attacks in as many weeks, the city's mayor indicated that decisive action would be necessary. Muslim leaders, however, said sections of the community were living in fear of shoot-to-kill policy after a man, not one of the four SOT bombers, was shot by officers in the Stockwell Tube Station yesterday. That's the Brazilian dude who got geeked. Following the first wave of London bombings on 7 July, it emerged that armed officers could be given the shoot-to-kill orders or to fire at the heads of suicide bombers. Well, that's obvious, because if they got a little button there and he gets wounded, all he's going to do is press the button and do a shitload of damage. Under the plan, as known as Operation Chaos, or pardon me, Operation Kratos, not Chaos, Kratos, police could, in extreme circumstances, shoot suspect suicide bombers in the head. Normal firearm rules allow officers to pursue and shoot to stop policy and fire at the chests of targets with the intention of stopping and disabling, but not killing. Now, this is ridiculous to me. The fact that you're saying to shoot to stop is absolutely retarded. If you're shooting somebody, that means you want to kill them, okay, because you're using a gun. Now, if you want to stop them, I suppose there's... Well, I mean, what if they're running? You want to wound them, right? You want to get them in the leg or something like that? But you don't know. I mean, you're on the ground. You don't know. This guy's running, right? You don't know if he's got a gun. You don't know what he's got. You know, if you wound the guy, now he's wounded. His back's really up against the wall. And if he's got a weapon, he's going to turn and fire, and it puts the officer in danger. So if you're going to shoot at a guy, yeah, blow a hole in him big enough to throw a cat through. That's what I say. Absolutely. If you're shooting at some dude, okay, you say stop. They don't stop. So you shoot them. Eventually, people will clue in that if you don't stop when the cops tell you to, they'll cut you in half. That's how it works. You see, that's how force works. That's why, you know, police force is something that, you know, has to be done by professionals and all the rest of it. I don't really understand here. What is it that a lot of these protesters are thinking? You know, they go out in England, they protest, which is fine. All for that. You know, protest away. You know, good stuff. Lots of crazy shit happening in the world. You know, but... when they get arrested, they complain about the prisons because they got arrested, but meanwhile they're going to jail. Like, what did they expect jail to be, you know? And now everyone's all upset because the cops are actually able to shoot people. Well, yeah, That's what police do. I think cops should be able to shoot people personally. I think that it's not a bad plan at all. As a matter of fact, if the cops were given carte blanche to shoot people, you'd find society would be getting a lot calmer a lot faster. But that's just me. You know, there'd be a lot less, you know, methed out junkie freaks running around trying to rape people and stuff like that if cops were able to shoot people once in a while. You know, granted, you know, I mean, there's a flip side to that where then you got, you know, Judge Dredd cops walking around geeking people. But there's something to be said for the Judge Dredd state, you know, if you just want to have a nice, peaceful people. But again, too, now we're getting draconian, you know, so there is a fine line there. You know, I'm not just saying that anyone should just walk around and start blasting. You know, the cop has a bad day, decides he's going to go down to the schoolyard and cut loose with the canine. No, that's not the idea here. Obviously, all this has to be tempered with a bit of restraint and training and all the rest of it. But in the circumstances like what they have in England right now, I don't think it's out of control for cops to have a shoot to kill. And I still say the cops did the right thing by dusting the guy in the tubes. But the Met has been advised by Israeli security officials that this is not adequate. Even after several shots, they can still trigger an explosive device. Oh my gosh. Scotland Yard yesterday insisted the policy of armed police was to shoot to stop when there was an imminent threat to life. Now that's nuts. That's nuts. Why would you shoot to stop if there's an imminent threat to life? If the person is going to kill somebody, okay, like, hi, I have a gun, and I'm going to shoot this innocent bystander. I am holding the gun, going to shoot the innocent bystander, have made a decision that I'm going to take a human life. Therefore, my own life is forfeit when the cops show up, because it's like, stop, no, bang, thud, thanks for coming out. Because, yeah, we're trying to kill somebody, and we killed you instead. So you're the one who started the goal-killing concept, and we've just moved past that. You see what I mean? I mean, maybe I'm way off base here. Maybe I'm like, you know, woo, totally going crazy. But I can totally see if you got terrorists running around with bombs on their chests, and everybody knows they're terrorists running around with bombs on their chests, and the cops tell you to stop, and they got guns out, you should probably stop. Because criminals and gang members don't tell you to stop. They just shoot you. In what the heck news, now this was that conference that almost didn't happen, but luckily, we managed to get the word out, everybody got the petition signed, and the conference went out without a single hitch. There are hundreds of tents on hot and soggy campgrounds, and this isn't your ordinary summertime outing, considering that includes workshops with titles such as The Politics of Psychedelic Research or Fun and Mayhem with RFID. This is the three-day What the Hack convention. Now, I've never been there, but I'd like to check this out. A self-styled computer security conference dealing with such issues as digital passports, biometrics, and cryptography. Borrowing from a model of Woodstock and the more professionalized DEF CON conference that begins Friday in Las Vegas, which was last Friday, the event held every 4 years in the Netherlands, every 4 years, wow, draws an international array of experts and geeks. About 3,000 gathered Thursday for the opening. I think I'll try to make the next one. Unlike the better known and better funded industry gatherings, What the Hack had to fight for its right to exist, which we covered earlier before. The mayor of the southern Dutch town of Boxtel, who oversees the village of Limpede, where the convention is held, initially tried to stop the event from pitching its hundreds of tents outside the town. A reluctance stemming from the lingering public image of hackers as antisocial, anarchistic, and vaguely menacing. The mayor withdrew his objections after meetings with the organizers. Some of the scheduled lectures at the workshops might reinforce the convention's shady reputation, such as the talk about mayhem with RFID, which stands for Radio Frequency Identification Tags, for all of you who live under a rock. But other seminars appeared wholesome enough, such as a workshop on how to make homes more energy efficient or how activists can lobby governments more effectively. Even the local police officer assigned to monitor What the Hacks are being included in the event. Officers are holding daily workshops to educate the public on how they can go about securing events like these. Wow, that's really cool. What a great idea. Such cooperation with the authorities would have raised eyebrows in previous years. Befitting the age of terrorism, the conference is taking up such security issues as biometrics and the new passport technology. But in line with its anarchistic reputation, organizers have made a parody of their own security arrangements, asking attendees to screen their own belongings at an unmanned baggage scanner. Now, that's got to have some good humor value there. I think that's great. Personally, I think it's absolutely fantastic that we're still able to have gatherings like this and still able to go off without a hitch. I don't think the problem is in... Again, like what they got going on here, this is a great thing for a couple of reasons. First of all, the whole concept of us and them regarding the police has got to go. Okay, that whole mindset of the police are out to get us. No! No, 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 no. The police are not out to get us. The police are out to get criminals and terrorists and scary people who do damage to society. That is the problem. We, as the hacker, cracker, you know, armada, wog people, you know, out there in the world, we are not the threat. And what we need to communicate to the law enforcement authorities is that we are not a threat. We are winning a war against the core politicals, but the core political, you'll notice the core political, law enforcement, is nowhere mentioned in the term core political. It's not there. Law enforcement is merely the sharp end of the stick, okay? These are the guys who enforce the policy of the core political, so they are not the enemy, okay? They are the symptom of the cause. The cause is the core political. If we can win the hearts and minds of law enforcement, you will find that our battle will be much easier against the core political. So why not have the cops come in? Come on in, CIA. Come on in, NSA. You want to know how things are working? Limit? Let's show you. We're all on the same side here. Nobody wants terrorism. Nobody wants people dying. Nobody wants to have, you know, information locked down and people being stupid and uneducated. Nobody wants that. Not even the cops. They're being, well, flooded with propaganda from the MPAA and the RIAA, and without a counterpoint, what are these officers going to believe? If we could just simply show them the truth, if we can give them information, let them participate in the sharing of knowledge, I mean, these are people, okay? The last time I checked, well, depending if you talk to David Icke, anytime you look at law enforcement, they all employ human beings, unless you're David Icke, in which case he thinks they're employing lizard people, but that's, I digress. Cops are people. Soldiers are people. All these people are people, humans, okay, with thoughts, hopes, and dreams. And they just want to get their paycheck, go home, have a family, and have some kind of quality of life. That is all they're really after. Now, granted, a lot of them have, you know, some kind of different, very focused programming sets from their work on their thought form. You know, and quite often you'll see those t-shirts with cops, world's largest street gang. And they have a very us and them mentality. But I bet you dollars to donuts that if the hacker cracker wears, you know, Decker's scene, if we went and tried to embrace law enforcement, if we went in there and said, hey guys, you know what? We're on your side. We're totally on your side. We agree with everything you're doing. You betcha. We think that some of your policies, which have been handed to you, are bullshit. And we'd like to see those go, and here's the reasons why we'd like to see them go, because we don't believe it really applies to a democratic free society to have it so that, you know, no one can learn how to read on their own and things like that. And we also believe that all information should be free because we believe in transparency, but we have to allow police officers into our convention so that they can see that there is no threat. If we try to deny them and lock everything up and all the rest of it, you know what's going to happen? They're going to assume the worst. They're going to assume we're terrorists. And the next thing you know, everybody's got matching bracelets. Not so much fun. Now, in spin news, the Bush administration is retooling its slogan for the fight against Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups. Because remember, we have war, right? This is war. Pushing the idea that the long-term struggle is much an ideological battle as a military mission. Oh, good. We're into the thought grind category. According to the senior administration officials. So, in recent speeches and news conferences, Defense Secretary Donnie Rumsfeld, the guy who's got his very own secret police that answer only to him, and the country's top military officials have spoken of a, quote, a global struggle against violent extremism. Ah, it's a struggle now. It's not a war, because war is bad, you know? It's like we're no longer and destroy. It's now catch and capture. You know, it's all doublespeak. This is total doublespeak. The global struggle against violent extremism rather than the global war on terror. Ah, I see. So terror has been substituted with violent extremism. And pretty soon that'll be extremism. And pretty soon yours truly will be added to the terrorist list unless we can communicate to the cops and begin getting them over onto our side that we are not, in fact, violent. There is no violence here. And extremism is a very vague term. That's even more vague than, you know, shit, than being a terrorist. I mean, wasn't it just a little while ago that everything was extreme? Hell, we got Extreme Radio Tampa. Does that mean that they're extremists? The extreme's part of their name. You know, and this all very rapidly turns into spin. Administration officials say the earlier phrase may have outlived its usefulness because it focused attention solely and incorrectly on the military campaign. Well, absolutely. Now what we need to do is get everybody totally fucking paranoid. General Richard Myers, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, told the National Press Club on Monday that he had objected to the use of the term war on terrorism before, because if you call it war, then you think people in uniform as being the solution, which isn't that what they're doing. He said that the threat should be defined as violent extremism with recognition that terror is the method that they use. Oh, this is good. Good, 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 good. Although the military is heavily engaged in their mission now, he said, future efforts require, quote, all instruments of our national power, all instruments of international communities' national power. I see. The solution is more diplomatic, more economic, more political than it is military. No, what it is it's hiding the truth. What they're doing is they don't want to be seen as the big draconian bad guys, so they're trying to change their language to reflect that. Unfortunately, it's not working. Now, in body mod news, back to the stem cell research, there is hope where all the psycho, mudhut, crazy religious people in the United States are starting to clue in that maybe science isn't the enemy. It's true that, in fact, even though we have the richest, most powerful military nation in the world being run by people who still follow beliefs of a 2,000-year-old dead Jew, it's finally happening that we are able to get some science in here and get some proper research done. And that's very positive to me, because the last thing I want is a bunch of people, you know, trying to consult, oh, I don't know, some crazy 2,000-year-old scroll when they're trying to deal with computers and technology on the modern stage. You know, it's time to put some, you know, when I walked as a child, spoke as a child, time to ditch the childish things. You know, anyone who kind of buys into that should really read, I think it's, what, 10 Corinthians? But anyway. In body mod news, a top Republican senator has backed a bill easing restrictions on embryonic stem cell research in a move that breaks rank with President George Bush. Good, 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 good. Good, good, good. So King George began to realize that some of his loyal followers are going, ah, no, George, we choose life. Bill Frist, Senate Majority Leader and surgeon, so he's a surgeon, formally announced his decision in the Senate on Friday. So the guy's actually a surgeon. Wow. He said he was pro-life. Oh, okay, that's, and I love the term pro-life, by the way. You know, pro-life means anti-woman, but anyway. But at the same time, he believed that stem cell research should be encouraged and supported. Well, absolutely it should be, because that's the future. President Bush has threatened to veto stem cell legislation already passed in the House of Representatives. Of course he has, because he's crazy. The new legislation would allow expanded financial support for embryonic stem cell research. Mr. Frist's support of the bill puts him at odds with legislation passed by the Bush administration in 2001 restricting human stem cell research. Yeah, bad law, bad rules. White House spokesman Scott McClain played down suggestion that the surgeon's stance would cause a rift with the president. Well, I don't think the president really actually has any belief structure anyway. I think he's just, you know, saying whatever he's got to say in order to get the voters. But that's just me. The president and Senator Frist had a good discussion last night. He said, Bush said you have to vote with your conscience. That's really funny, because this guy is a surgeon, right? And Bush is not... I don't think he's probably as clever as the first guy is, so I'd love to have been a fly on the wall during that conversation. Speaking in the Senate, Mr. Frist said, I am pro-life. I believe that human life begins at conception. I also believe that embryonic stem cell research should be encouraged and supported. Yes, because it's preservation of the human life after it's born. If you can get human life, existing human lives, to be better, then why not do this? Now, just to keep you up on the stem cell milestones here, in the 1960s, research began on stem cell research taken from adult tissue. 1968, adult stem cells used to treat an immune-deficient patient. In 1998, like 30 years later, a U.S. scientist grows stem cells from human embryos and germ cells, establishing cell lines still in use today. In 2001, embryonic stem cell turned into a blood cell. 2004, Korean scientists cloned 30 human embryos and developed them over several days. In 2005, Korean team developed stem cells tailored to match individual patients. And that is very, very cool, because as this technology increases, more and more people will be able to live happy, healthy lives and ditch disease and genetic defects, which would be very, very cool. Now, in Life on Mars news, and how cool is this? You can't even tell me how cool this is. A giant patch of frozen water has been pictured nestled within an unmanned, Of course it's unmanned. It's on Mars. Unnamed impact crater on Mars. The photographs were taken by the high-resolution stereo camera on board the Mars Express, the European Space Agency's probe, which is exploring the planet. Oh, doesn't that suck? The Europeans discovered water on Mars. So if they discovered the water on Mars and there's life or traces of life in that water, wouldn't it be true that the European Space Agency discovered life on Mars? Wouldn't that be the case? The ice disk is located in the Vastidas Borealis, a broad plain that covers much of Mars' farther northern latitudes. The existence of the water ice patch on Mars raises the prospect that past or present life will one day be detected. I'm sure Richard C. Hoagland over at Enterprise.com is losing his fucking mind right now. It also boosts the chances that manned missions could eventually be sent to the Red Planet because they would probably need accessible water to survive. I don't know about you, but if I was one of the astronauts who touched down in that crater, you would not want to see the water filtration system. I would be cranking through that ice water today before I drank it, because holy cow, I'd be like, imagine getting a drink in Martian water. Like, would you do it? Seriously, if you got, like, a glass of water, which they told you was clean, but it's from Mars, would you drink it? I don't know, man. I don't know. I've seen a lot of science fiction movies. Be a little dodgy. I'd want to make sure I put that thing would go through spectral analysis. Like, holy crap, would we ever be doing tests on that? The highly visible ice lake is sitting in a crater which is 35 kilometers, 23 miles wide, and a maximum depth about 2 kilometers. Like, man, as a writer, dude, could you ever cook up some stories? You know, what's frozen down there? How'd that water get down there? Maybe, you know, like, go see the thing again. Scientists believe the water ice is present all year round because the temperature and pressure are not sufficient to allow it to change states. So who knows how long that water's been there? Who knows what kind of frozen life forms may be in the water? There's people who claim that there are oceans, and there were oceans, but they're not our oceans, but there were oceans on Mars, and there was life there. There is even those who claim that our life came from Mars and migrated to this planet. That's entirely possible. Do not know for sure. Researchers studying the images are sure it is not frozen carbon dioxide, because CO2 ice has already disappeared from the North Polar Cap at the time the image was taken. So that's very exciting. That is super exciting to see that, again, because we, as we all know, on our planet, water is crucial to life. So who's to say what kind of life could exist on another planet if they have water? Very, very cool. I like that a lot. Now, the Caps Locker sent me some booster news here. And this is, you know, if ever there was a reason to just get off Coca-Cola, get off Pepsi, get off the pop, get off the soft drinks, okay? Actually, you know what? Soft drinks aren't so bad, because there's other companies out there that sell, you know, colas that aren't totally loaded with really, you know, laden with scary, scary chemicals. Now, when they're starting, like, we all know that there's excitotoxins inside of Coca-Cola. That's because those of us who drink Coca-Cola or Pepsi or any soft drink, well, if you try to stop, you get headaches, you feel nausea, you get sick, you suffer withdrawal, which is something nobody talks about, but everybody knows if you drink a lot of pop and you stop drinking pop, guess what? You suffer withdrawal. Everybody knows that. Well, if you think the withdrawal symptoms are bad now, oh, wait for it, Gracie, because it is in the mail. Listen to this article here. Sit back, have a drink, and lose weight. Seriously. Well, maybe. A handful of entrepreneurs aim to take the term diet drink to a whole new level, promising to speed metabolism, burn calories, and add in weight loss. This is called speed. Through the niche, still composed of tiny brands you've probably never heard of, Atlanta-based Coca-Cola may get in the game. Now, this is, you know, we've talked about speed beer before, okay, but it seems that Coca-Cola is getting into the whole market of speed beer because they want to dominate that market. Nestle, a giant, evil, nasty, scary partner with Coca-Cola, who's another giant, nasty, evil, as Nestle, a partner with Coke on bottled tea products, has filed for a trademark for a drink called Enviga. The two companies have been developing a tea that would burn calories, say, for people familiar with the project. It may be carbonated and come in several flavors, including green tea, lemon lime, and orange. A Coke spokesman declined to comment, other than to say that Coke is always researching and developing many products. It is too early to speculate whether about when or where Enviga will hit the market. In the meantime, companies are pushing products like Skinny Water, bottled water that claims to speed up metabolism and spur weight loss. Celsius, which comes in cola, lemon, lime, and ginger ale flavors, and promises to increase metabolism. And Foos Slendriz, a fruity drink that touts ingredients known to aid in weight loss. Because after all, we have an epidemic, right? It's an epidemic of fat in America. Because Americans don't seem to want to take accountability for their own health. If they do, why is there so much obesity out there? And it's not just Americans, it's North Americans, I should state. The young companies need to prove their science to consumers, many of whom are wary of yet another weight loss promise. I think we're a little bit more wary of the drugs. Thanks. A leading scientist in food nutrition says it's too good. A leading scientist in food nutrition, whoever the hell that is, it's a leading scientist. What are they all racing? Says this isn't too good to be true, at least not in theory. Well, thanks for being vague. David Allison, a professor and director of the Clinical Nutrition Research Center at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. Well, at least they got some heavy hitters. Said he wasn't familiar with the drinks that speed metabolism. However, he said, it is absolutely possible. Wow, good. I don't know anything, but I believe it's possible. There are substances out there, now mostly available in powder form, that increase metabolism, which basically means that they increase the rate at which the body expends energy while resting. Yeah, they're called cocaine, man! You know, this is cocaine. Let's not forget that Coca-Cola was the company that put cocaine in their drink in the early days to make sure that their drink was successful on the market. You know, there's no actual... The last thing that business owners want you to have is choice. That's the last thing they want. Nobody wants you to have choice. What they want you to be is addicted to their product, you know, so that you can be essentially their slave. However, it is easy to measure such a metabolic change in a laboratory to prove a claim, he said. However, he points out that even if laboratory tests prove drinks do speed metabolism, it's harder to prove drinks will lead to weight loss or that they are safe for everyone. Now, here's the big line. Here's the $50 million line right here. You ready for this one? Drinks do not need approval from the Food and Drug Administration. So the FDA doesn't go near any of these soft drinks. And since they don't go near the soft drinks, what do you suppose the checks and balances are to stop addictive excitotoxins or perhaps metabolic enhancers that are also happen to be addicted from being pumped into Coca-Cola and Nestle products? What do you suppose the chances are of that? I would say the chances are quite logically pretty goddamn high. Now in pot news, speaking of drugs, in pot news, and this was sent to me by Sumerian, police raided a business run by the head of the BC Marijuana Party on Friday based on a search warrant that was requested by the U.S. government. So that's good. The U.S. government says, yeah, go arrest this guy and rip his shit up. Mark Emery, who I know, who I've met a number of times, and who is actually, I'd say he's a good guy. He smoked an awful lot of weed, probably too much weed, but I'll tell you one thing right now. Mark Emery may be a lot of things. He may be a stoner, he may be helpless, he may be harmless, he may be a hero, he may be a villain. I don't know what this guy is, but I'll tell you one thing that he definitely is. He's harmless. The guy is not a threat to anyone, okay? He is not a threat. There's no chance that this man could probably win a fist fight, never mind anything else. Mark Emery, the leader of the BC Marijuana Party, was not at the store when it was raided, but Chris Bennett, who witnessed the raid and is an employee of Pot TV, said Mark Emery had been arrested in Halifax. He's on the other side of the country getting busted. Authorization to conduct the raid was made Thursday by the Associate Chief Justice Patrick Dome of BC Supreme Court under the Mutual Legal Assistance in Criminal Matters Act. So another country decided we don't like this person, and Canada just goes, yeah, okay, we'll just go arrest him then. Several officers, some in plain clothes, some in uniform, raided the marijuana seed and paraphernalia store. So they have seeds there. There's no weed in the store, by the way. Well, other than the weed that probably the people have. And I've seen them. I've been in the store. I know the store very well. You go in there, and there's quite openly people rolling joints on the counters. There are quite openly people smoking weed in front of the store. I should also note that the attitude in the store is one of, like, total love. You walk in there, and it's kind of funny, actually. It's really kind of hilarious because you walk in there, and everyone's like, hey, dude, how you doing? We love you. And that's totally the vibe. It's like you're walking into the total, like, threatening is not a term I would associate with this particular store. And this is on West Hastings. I think it's called, oh, Christ, what's it called? The BC Marijuana Party is where they're stationed. I'm not too sure what the actual name of the store is, though. Funny that. But it's on West Hastings in downtown Vancouver, owned by Mark Emery, who the search warrants also described by his alias, the Prince of Pot. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? Like, if he's the Prince of Pot, he would be a lot fatter than he is. I mean, because the guy's pretty slim. This is after, incidentally, he went to jail in Saskatchewan and was picking up garbage outside of, you know, several prisons because he happened to take a toke. The search warrant named Mr. Emery Gregory Williams, Mr. Emery Gregory Williams, and Michael Rainey Farrack, Mr. Bennett and Mr. Williams, were taken into police custody at the store on Friday, while Rainey Farrack was arrested at her home on Thursday night. Police were not immediately available to comment on whether any of the arrests had been made. Oh, I see. Well, obviously, people have been arrested. The store, named Toker's Bowl, is adjacent to the new Amsterdam Cafe, where people have been smoking marijuana openly for years. Now, it should be stated that the new Amsterdam Cafe is probably one of the darkest places, meaning absence of light, in all of Vancouver. It is very subtle. You don't go in there, and they're not, like, pushing marijuana on you. It's like a low-lit bar. You walk in there. There's lots of booths. People sit down, smoke some weed, listen to some ambient music. There's no problems here. There's no heroin in there. There's no injections in there. There's no violence in there. There's never been any violence in there. This is not a problem. I don't understand this huge hatred. Several people gathered outside the store to protest the raid, many holding anti-American signs. Yeah, obviously, because Americans just showed up and, you know, raided someone in a foreign country. This is, realistically, this is an espionage thing. Police sealed off the store and covered the windows with paper while they conducted the search, thereby allowing them to plant any evidence they would want to. The search warrant sets out a long list of requests made by the United States to the Vancouver Police Department. In the warrant, the U.S. alleges that those names have conspired to manufacture marijuana. Okay, for the record, that if that's what the wording is, nobody's going to jail because it's not possible to manufacture marijuana. You can't manufacture it. You grow marijuana. It is a weed which grows naturally in every country around the world, except for maybe, like, I don't know, the Arctic. Conspired to distribute marijuana seeds. Oh, my God, they're planting plants. And conspired to engage in money laundering. Now, that one there, good luck trying to prove that, because I don't believe that they're doing money laundering there at all. That's totally against everything that Mark stands for. The warrant requests that police seize cash and receipts, client lists, and other records identifying purchases of goods from Emery, and employee records, including applications for employment. So if you try to get a job there, if you're a pot smoker and you've been in that store, we know about you. It also asks for businesses and company incorporation documents, leases, rental agreements, computers, hard drive, disks, CD-ROMs, your Uncle Hetchy, trees, tribbles, antimatter, you name it. That's what the cops showed up and took. And that's really sick and weird because, realistically, these people are not the problem, okay? Why are you attacking stoners? Do you know why terrorists don't feed their terrorist people weed? Do you know why that doesn't happen? They feed them cats. In the Moog, they feed them all kinds of cats. They feed them PCP. The SS were running all over Europe, dosing huge on methamphetamines. Hitler himself got 5 injections of meth a day. Okay? So why is it then, if this is such a dangerous drug, why isn't it being given to terrorists? Why isn't it being given to people who want to be aggressive? The reason why is because marijuana is the one of the... first of all, it's barely even a drug right off the top. And secondly, you are non-violent. It is a non-violent drug. You don't do any... It's a plant. It's a weed. It's a herb, okay? When you smoke weed, you're not going to blow nothing up. You sit there and you listen to Bob Marley. Okay, why is there all this hatred towards it? The reason why is because it is a very, very viable antidepressant. And of course, all the core politicals want weed gone. No, no, no. We don't want any knowledge about antidepressants getting out there. That way other people will be able to get on other antidepressants rather than our good pharma fascist antidepressants. People have been using marijuana to treat depression for ages. Don't believe me? Do the research. The science is right there while it's still right there online. Emperor Wears No Clothes. Good book. Check it out. Gives you everything you ever wanted to know. It was originally made illegal, not by the government, but by the pulp and paper industry. There's so many things you can do with it. You can make gas out of it. You know, and it's quite obviously a core political plot. I, again, you know, I feel bad for the cops having to make this raid because I guarantee a lot of the cops know that this is just a job. They are enforcing the will of their core political masters. So, again, I don't fault the police for this because, again, they're just the sharp end of the stick. Now, in health news, this was sent to me by Hellfire99X. On Thursday, the United States Food and Drug Administration, FDA Commissioner Lester Crawford, banned the use of Bayer's aspirin. They're the same guys who made Cyclon B in the Second World War. Antibiotic Baytril for poultry on the grounds it was responsible for the increasing instances of antibiotic-resistant foodborne diseases in humans. The ban would be in effect as of September 12th of this year. The drug, sold as enrofloxacin, makes... Oh, here we go. We're getting some really big words here. Campylobacter bacteria, a bacteria found in the digestive system of poultry, more resistant to antibiotics because it does not kill all the bacteria and leaves some surviving. Baytril, in use since 1996, for curing respiratory diseases in chickens, so this has been around for 10 years already, was found after 10 years to have increased drug-resistant Campylobacter infections in humans significantly. Symptoms of infection include high fever, muscle pains, and diarrhea with blood. Wow. The bacteria also causes arthritis and bloodstream complications in humans. You know, yet more reasons why you may wish to reconsider eating meat. Holy crap. Or at least, at the very least, eating, you know, organic meat. Now, in E-Generation news, you know, there was the Generation X and Generation Who and God knows what else. I guess the next one, I'm going to, you know, go out on a limb and say that the next one they're going to call, and this is a total marketing term, and I don't know if they're already using this one, but I'm going to say the next generation is going to be called the E-Generation from this story from Machine Screw. A new survey says the internet has all but saturated the youth market in no duh news. The report compiled from the Pew Internet and American Life Project found that nearly 9 out of 10 young people ages 12 to 17 have online access, up from about three-quarters of young people in 2000. I'd like to see how many of these people were listed as, you know, inner city or kids in the projects, or are these just good white suburban kids? By comparison, about 66% of American adults now use the internet. David Bowman, a 17-year-old high school senior from Indianapolis, a typical example of a wired teen. He first got access to the internet when he was 13, did most of those surveys. He has a blog and loves to use instant messaging to stay in touch with friends he met at camp and sporting events. Aww. He also gets his news online because he listens to Newsreel, as do about three-quarters of teen internet users who were surveyed. There's an increase of about 38% compared with 2000 results. I see. That's as in the year 2000, not as in 2000 results individually. It's hard to imagine my life without it, says Pullman says of the net. In some ways, life would become a little easier because it would slow down, but it would become a lot more boring because you would always be waiting for letters and responses. Ah, that's interesting how he noted everything would kind of slow down. At the same time, he says he and his friends have honed their internet use, seeing it more as a tool for communication or research than as a novelty. Which is true, because if you've ever lost your internet connection, you know it's like having your hands cut off. Amanda Lehart, a Pew researcher, says that rings true with the findings of the survey. Teens are very selective. They're smart about their technology use, she says. They use it for the kinds of things they need to do. As one teen in a focus group told her, if you're asking for your parents to extend your curfew, you don't send an email. Ah. The survey, completed in 2004, included responses from 1,100 young people who were contacted randomly by phone. It has a margin of error of 4 percentage points, and findings include the following. Now, I'm not even going to list the followings here, because what they did is they phoned 1,100 young people, apparently, at random. But that's not accurate. That's not accurate. What about all the young people who are too poor to be online? What about all the young people that just didn't answer the phone? What about all these young people out there who aren't online? I don't believe the youth market is saturated at all, because I think there's an awful lot of Americans out there who can't read. And being as they cannot read, they cannot use the internet. That's not me saying that. That's what science is saying. So, you know, maybe this is a puffy poo piece to try to, you know, puff up American lifestyle and all that. But there's a lot of work to be done to share knowledge amongst the younger privileged inside of the United States and Canada. Now, in RFID news sent in by Pig Monkey, Lauren Scott of California is blazing a new trail in children's wear. Oh, good. The $2 million a year apparel division of DST Media Incorporated will launch, you ready for this one, a line of pajamas with radio frequency identification tags sewn into the hems. Readers positioned at various points throughout the house, such as doorways and windows, will be able to scan the tags within a 30-foot radius. An alarm will be triggered when boundaries are breached. You look at these kids and think, I would do everything to protect them, says proprietor Lauren Scott, who licensed the RFID technology from Smartware Technologies Incorporated, a manufacturer and supplier of personal security systems. I'm confident other manufacturers and children's wear will follow within the next year. Scott will introduce the sleepwear in her spring 2006 collection. An estimated 250,000 pieces will begin shipping to various retail stores in December and expected to be available to consumers in February. Target Corp has placed an order for the sleepwear and is expected to be carrying out children's nightgowns in selected stores earlier this year, Scott said. Target did not return phone calls by press time. Adding technology to a piece of clothing has not been trouble-free. Slight manufacturing techniques and design changes were made to the clothing to accommodate the electronics. Hems were made a little deeper in pajamas and nightgowns to conceal the tags. Now, Mike, you know what I don't understand? It goes on and talks about the pajamas. So they're putting RFIDs in pajamas, right? That's the whole plan here. Now, the thing that kind of makes me go, well, that's cool. But if somebody breaks into your house, your child sneaks out of the house, what does this do? Does this, you know, set off an alarm inside the house and it goes, man, your child has left the building? Because if it doesn't do that, what does it give you? I mean, realistically, yeah, your child was kidnapped at this time. How do we know? Because the RFID said so. So unless they set it up like making houses little prisons for young people to track where they are, you know, and the potential to exploit this for evil means gets pretty big because kids then get used to being tracked, because it always start with the children, right? Get them used to being tracked, get them used to saying where they are at all times, and that way you just know where everybody is and there's no problems, right? So much for freedom. We'll breed it out of our young people. What a great idea. Now, in child injection news, this is from Hammer. Now, listen to this. Thousands of parents across the state are exempting their children from required school vaccines despite concerns that Texas is one of the most poorly immunized states in the nation. I love how they phrase that. Instead of being poorly immunized, they could use just to say it's one of the least immunized states in the nation. Yeah, you know, it's all in the wording. The state health department has mailed 36,993 affidavits to roughly 11,400 people interested in claiming conscientious objection created by the legislature 2 years to give parents more flexibility to refuse shots. Though some parents applaud the law, medical experts fear that Texas and 17 other states that allow such broad philosophical exemptions are sending the wrong message. Without the shots, they say potentially fatal diseases such as measles and whooping cough could make a comeback. Well, you know, I remember when I was a kid, a lot of people had measles, and I don't remember anybody dying from it. In the area of public health, we typically have rules, said Paul Off, chief of infectious diseases at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. This replaces medical correctness with political correctness. Well, you know, doctors don't always know everything. Parents can offer affidavits for conscientious objections from the Texas Department of State Health Services. The form, which must be signed and notarized, replaces the state's religious exemption according to House Bill 2292. Parents can still seek medical waivers, too. To me, it's an issue of parental rights, says Rebecca Rex, a Houston mother and co-founder of Parents Requesting Open Vaccine Education, which lobbied for the year 6 years ago. I feel like it gave parents more ability to control what's done to their child, which apparently it did. And there's huge notes about mercury in a lot of these vaccinations. So I think that this whole concept of vaccination of children, I think it has a point, and there is things that, you know, you need to make sure your children are healthy for. But if I'm going to do that, I wouldn't want it coming from a public school system. I'll go to a doctor, make sure that I know exactly what's being injected, every single mixture. I will be present while this occurs before you put some weird serum in my child. That's just me, though. If you're worried about diseases, by all means, if you think there's a real threat to put your child's health in jeopardy, then go do it privately. Don't trust the public system. Now, in Wicked Clown news, and this was sent to me by Tech Freak, thousands of McDonald's workers in Japan were underpaid. Of course, I would put it to you that all McDonald's workers globally all are underpaid, but these particular ones in Japan were underpaid due to the company's policy of rounding down regular and overtime wages to the nearest 30 minutes per day, it has been learned. So they're like, oh, well, you work 50 minutes over, whatever, we're rounding that up. That's illegal. So if they're doing that at your work, it is illegal. Go to the link, see this. The Ministry of Health, Labor, and Welfare permits the rounding down of wages to the nearest 30 minutes for an entire month. The McDonald's Holdings Company Japan rounded down the wages to the nearest 30-minute daily. The company officials said they returned 2 years' worth of payments to about 100,000 regular and part-time workers. Wow. McDonald's official says the Labor Standards Inspection Office in Hyogo Prefecture informed the company by the end of May that the method of calculating overtime for its employees was inappropriate and told to improve its practices. The same calculation methods were used at all 3,771 McDonald's stores and franchise outlets in Japan. To improve its practices, the company began calculating working hours and one-minute intervals at its stores. The question about the practice of rounding down wages to the nearest 30 minutes, a representative of the company said, the period is unclear, but this has been what is done in the past. Well, you know, if it's all rounded down to 30 minutes, well, who cares, right? You know, if I'm scheduled to work to 4 o'clock, I'll just, you know, leave at 3:45 because, you know, we'll just round it up. Whatever. Not a big deal. You know, because after all, it's just time, right? So why should I let McDonald's have my time? I'll just take my time for myself. That's a better idea, I think. And in dark net news, now this is interesting. The music industry shouldn't get too comfortable with some recent Supreme Court victory over Grokster because, once again, server provides. An Irish programmer, atta boy, has announced a company security conference last week that he is developing a virtually invisible to the new peer-to-peer system that would be virtually invisible to the prying eyes of governments and corporations. Hoorah! Promoting the idea of a darknet, free speech advocate Ian Clark, 28, says he's developing a new version of his Freenet file sharing system that will make it easier to trade digital information anonymously in a bid to combat censorship and political repression, but not necessarily to violate copyrights, according to the report by the New York Times. Now, this is very, very cool, and if anyone has, the minute this client gets available, make sure that I get set up with that, please. Clark's announcement comes just a month after the Supreme Court ruled against peer-to-peer networks, Grokster and Streamcast declined their publishers can be held liable for copyright infringement as a result of using their products. Ah, Clark's new software, which he plans to release in a few months, differs from current open P2P networks. Instead of using a closed system that requires new users to be trusted by an existing number to enter their web of trust, keeping out those they do not know. Ah, so it's a closed system. Instead using a closed system that requires new users to be trusted by an existing member to enter their web of trust, keeping out those out who they don't know. So it's kind of a private network, but this could really bite you in the ass, you know, because then they could start labeling this thing as terrorist rings and stuff like that. So you got to be careful with stuff like this, but it's going to be interesting to follow. Today's daily hack is the photographer's rights flyer. The right to take photographs is under assault now more than ever. People are being stopped, harassed, even intimidated by handing over their personal property simply because they were taking photographs of subjects that made other people uncomfortable. Now, that's nuts. Recent examples have included photographing industrial plants, bridges, and bus stations. For the most part, attempts to restrict photography are based on misguided fears about the supposed dangers that unrestricted photography presents to society. I guess unrestricted photography is pornography. And you can get more on this off of my live journal. There's a flyer here you can download and hand to people if you happen to be a photographer and would like to fight the good fight. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of those 71 people who are willing to fight in a time of crisis. And the new recruits this month in the Newsreel Flying Monkey Army were 5. If you would like to help do this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab, because believe you me, every little bit helps. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L-R-E. Let's try that again. N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Apocalyptica called Inquisition. These guys rock my socks. Anyway, I'm going to leave you now with a great Marilyn Manson tune. And until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line. Angel with the scat wings, hot jug face, one about it, who knows? He will devour the freshest crop, dry up all the wounds with his rock and roll sores. Rock and roll sores.